With all the action by the Fed and interest rates at near zero, unemployment has come down, but not enough. So two questions. Doesn't this challenge the effectiveness of monetary policy to affect unemployment, at least today? And what should be done to reduce the unemployment rate?
So the first question, I've articulated in my remarks that I think the way monetary policy works, and the way it works to be effective, is we communicate an objective for what we were trying to do with inflation, and we set monetary policy so as to achieve that objective. By doing so, we are doing what we can to keep, we are keeping unemployment lower than it otherwise would be. And I certainly agree with you that unemployment remains disturbingly high. And I think that there's a range of possible options, policy options that are going to be, I'm sure, will be considered going forward. I think there is a fundamental discussion going on among economists. So by training, I'm a professional economist. I spent 20 years as an academic teaching at various universities, and that. I think it's generally recognized that recoveries from financial crises have been very slow. So there's a book by Carmen Reinhart and Ken Rogoff called This Time is Different. It's a sarcastic title because it's a reference to the fact that this time is not different. It's about financial crises over the last 800 years. And the basic bottom line from that book is that the recovery from financial crises tends to be very slow. The policy discussion among economists is about, is that because those countries have not figured out the right policy response to that, to in the wake of those financial crises? Or is it because there is nothing to be done? And we just have to work our way through. Most people, and I agree with this, emphasize the deleveraging that has to take place in the wake of these crises. I think that discussion is going to continue both among academics, and it will translate into a discussion among policymakers as well. So I don't have a short, sharp answer to your second question, unfortunately.
Thank you, Mr. President, for your comments. I understand your thinking about the reduction in unemployment, and which effectively says that the size of workforce participation decreases, if I understand you correctly. What are is your thinking, if not that of the Feds, on how workforce participation decreases is going to impact economic growth, and it has social implications, particularly with youth unemployment? We've seen a very big example of that in the United Kingdom over these last couple of months.
We've seen it in our own country as well. If you look at the youth participation rate for July, I believe it's the lowest in this country. People aged 16 to 24, their labor force participation rate is lower than it's ever been in the history of the series. I'll talk about the broader context and then narrow it down. I think the question of what will happen to labor force participation and ultimately to employment in the next few years I regard that as highly uncertain, and I don't have, I wish I could offer more certainty about that. I think that obviously having stronger growth would help employment, and having more employment would foster growth, and so there's this feedback between the two. But I'll point back again to the observation that recoveries are often very slow, and after financial crises, we're gonna have to see an unwinding of the financial positions that people took at the beginning of that led to the crisis itself. And that process is going to be a slow one. I'll then narrow it down to think about the Fed's role. We typically do couch our employment objective in terms of unemployment. It is the challenge, labor force participation. There are cyclical features to it, but when you think about more medium term, you're talking about a 5-year movement in labor force participation. I think that if you try to use monetary policy to offset that, you're running big risks of the kind of upward movement in inflation, inflation expectations drift, and then ultimately having a tighten risk that I talked about earlier. The reason we think of ourselves using monetary policy to fill in the gap, so to speak, to help the economy use resources more efficiently. Trying to use monetary policy to offset more medium-term movements in labor force participation of the kind that we've been seeing, I think is an inappropriate use of that tool.
Even though you said you voted against the latest FOMC policy, you plan to support it in the future, or at least as long as that exists, what conditions would you see that would happen that would cause the board and the committee and you to reevaluate that, maybe in an interim before 2013 run?
Yeah, so to be clear, the statement itself refers to it's being conditional, and so there are conditions under which it would be the committee would raise rates, even though they've made this condition, what I refer to as a conditional commitment in the statement. What those conditions would be, I think would be a subject of discussion within the committee. In broad terms, sufficiently large realizations of inflation, sufficient success in unemployment falling sufficiently, large movements in inflation expectations. Now, those are the kinds of things people will be looking at. What those adjectives translate into numbers, that will be a subject for ongoing discussion.
The last few months, or 2-3 years, have seen a lot of high-powered money released into the economy, and the velocity of money has been quite low, especially recently. How do you see that changing? What would be an orderly unwinding of that, you know, that velocity to increase, and what would be the likely way to avoid an inflationary flare?
So this is a great question, because one of my colleagues, President John Williams in San Francisco, gave a speech about this a couple of months ago. Like all of you, and probably even more than all of you, I spent many hours learning about how you create a lot of money, you're going to get inflation. And I think it's very important to understand that was conditional on the fact that the central bank could not pay interest on reserves. When you learn that lesson, that was on the assumption that the central bank was paying zero interest on reserves. If the central bank can pay interest on reserves, and it allows it basically have a large balance sheet and still maintain control of inflation. The basic argument is, if you may keep the interest reserves rising at the appropriate rate, then the bank won't be lending out those reserves. And that's what would fuel the inflation is taking the reserves, transferring them from being excess reserves into being no longer excess. As long as we can raise the interest rate on reserves at the right rate, then that's not a problem. But you might ask yourself, will you be able to do that? Will the Fed do that? That's a question you should always ask yourself. Will the Fed raise rates appropriately to keep inflation under control? The size of our balance sheet does not affect that. The same questioning should be occurring to you regardless of what our size of our balance sheet is. Will we raise rates appropriately to keep inflation under control? Now, I'll say to you, yes, we will, because I'm a central banker, and that's what I'm going to say. But my point is not about that. My point is the set of questions and the set of issues, because we can pay interest in reserves, are exactly the same as they are, regardless of the size of our balance sheet.
Based on what you just said, and also on your very cogent argument for your position regarding the rates and inflation, and while acknowledging at the same time the problem of unemployment that you mentioned here as well as abroad, and the both economic and social problems that causes, and the fact that there is a Congress in Washington which does not believe in using fiscal tools, what do you see coming down the road?
Well, I've offered my forecast. I think that we're going to continue to see growth that's consistent with historical levels of growth. So if we had, I'm forecasting, as I mentioned, a 2.5% growth rate between over the two-year 2011-2012 period. That growth rate is a little under the 2.8% per year we've normally enjoyed. The issue is that I would say in some sense, 10% of the whole relative to where we were at the end of 2007, the sense that we're about 10% below what we would have expected to be at if we had grown that 2.8% per year over the last 3.5 years. Growing at 2.5% doesn't make any headway on that. What that means is that puts relatively little pressure in terms of job creation on the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate may fall, and I'm predicting it will fall, but it will fall because people leaving the labor force. I think this is a process that you're going to continue to see declines in the unemployment rate over the next 5 years. I think ultimately we will get back down to 5 to 6% in the United States in terms of unemployment. But where the employment population ratio will settle, I think that's going to depend on how quickly this process of deleveraging I referred to earlier takes place. That is, how rapidly can households get their balance sheets back into a position they feel comfortable with, where they feel comfortable starting to spend at the levels that are needed to support the rate of growth that we need in this country. So I think it's been a medium term problem. It's going to be a even longer term problem. I agree with the chairman's remarks in Jackson Hole. The fundamentals in this country are very strong. We will get back to growing the way we're used to in the United States. We'll get back to the kind of standard of living we're used to in the United States, but there's going to be a transition process, and that will take some time.
But he sort of tossed some of the ball to the fiscal area.
I think that, so the question was about the tossing of the ball to the fiscal area. I think, I'm not going to try to put words in his mouth, I'll talk about my own views on this. I think that we have a longer-term fiscal issue in this country, and this is faced by all the developed economies, that their populations are aging, and that's going to put pressures on sort of the obligations that they've made to older people relative to the size of the tax base. And when you look at the Congressional Budget Office projection, who am I talking about? I'm talking about just state treasurers. You guys all know this stuff. But anyways, these are the pressures that are unfolding over the longer term in the federal level because of the ability to borrow. So there's a longer term case in which you have to get your house in order. I think that the way this tension is going to be in place for multiple years, 15, 20 years down the road, we're going to be having this conflict about balancing taxes, how we're going to need to fulfill obligations versus the taxation need to fulfill those obligations. The way that process unfolded over the last month or two, I think, injected a lot of short-term uncertainties into the economy that I would like to have seen avoided. And I'm hoping, and I'm optimistic that we will get to a point over the next 15 or 20 years where we can resolve these conflicts, which are inevitable, without having the short-term uncertainties injected into the economy that we saw. And that's the sense of which I think that, you know, heard reference to the fall in consumer confidence over the last couple months, the very sharp fall. I think that was due to the way the fiscal uncertainties, the fiscal conflict was being dealt with in Washington. And I'm optimistic that we'll find a better way going forward. But unfortunately, my schedule calls for me to move on to elsewhere in Bismarck. Thank you very much for listening.